It's been mentioned on this podcast before and well documented in print that Broken Social Scene co-founder bassist Brendan Canning and I used to live together. We ended up under the same roof through our mutual friend Richard Switzer, who in turn ended up putting out one of our EPs, My Love is Bold, on his Sound King record label. When I did move in with Brendan and Richard, I was suffering from yet another collapsed relationship and was glad to be in a different environment with some good people. And those two guys helped me get through my depressed state, whether they realized it or not. What I didn't realize was the house I had moved into now was a bustling social epicenter of the Toronto music scene, at least relative to what I was used to. My time at the house, which ended up being 4 years worth, had me meeting a variety of people in the music scene I would never have met otherwise. Some of these people eventually became internationally known, like the Broken Social Scene crew, Peaches, Do Make Say Think, and Leslie Feist. In fact, Leslie was one of the first people I met when I moved in with Brendan and Richard, and I remember her telling me that there were a lot of people vying for the third roommate spot at the house. It made me feel nice and welcomed at a time in my life when I wasn't feeling that great. Well, life moves on, and my time away from home, due to increased touring, eventually made me move out. And in the last 12 years, Brendan, Richard, and I have only been able to see each other at birthdays and Christmas lunches. However, this podcast has allowed at least me and Brendan to hang out every once in a while. This is his third appearance on the podcast, and a veteran Black Coffee Brigade brigadier, if that's the proper way to say that title. Like I mentioned, I met Leslie Feist through Brendan. I believe in our kitchen one night, just hanging out, and of course, since that time, her star has risen to heights of Grammy nominations, Sesame Street, and Saturday Night Live appearances, which, in my opinion, are true marks of having made it, and countless other accolades too numerous to mention here. Sometimes, even people who you call friends have to be given a window of time until their ego gets checked when success comes, but not Leslie. She's always been very down to earth and just a cool hang. However, she's also supremely busy. That's what happens when the world wants you. The wheels to get this podcast happening started on March 5th, 2012. So this podcast took over 14 months to happen, mainly due to my tenacity and her high tolerance of said tenacity. She endured me quite considerately, and I thank her for that. To add even more scheduling nightmares into the mix, we invited both Brendan and Nick Flanagan onto the podcast episode when there was finally an opening with all our timetables lining up. Despite the fact that it would be the day after getting home from a tour, I confirmed it and hoped for the best. There's a lot of regional scene talk in this episode, but a lot of the players name-dropped have gone on to acquire some acclaim and notability, so it's not that hard to follow the thread. Also, at a couple of points during the podcast, you can hear audio dropouts. Those were deliberate, due to Brendan name-dropping certain people or a certain person, and I took certain people or certain persons' names out in order to protect Brendan, because he has a penchant for brazenly calling people out. I wanna thank Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones, too, for supporting this podcast. And everyone who has left a comment on iTunes or SoundCloud. We appreciate the feedback, and please keep those coming, especially the compliments. I had a blast catching up with old friends, and what made it even more special is that this is the podcast's 50th episode, and I can't think of a better way to celebrate than having Feist and Canning and Flanagan on the podcast. There are no plans to slow down, and we have some great episodes coming down the pipe in the next few weeks, too. So check it out. Leslie Feist and Brendan Canning are this episode's guests on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now.
So lame now. I don't even want drip coffee ever. I'm like a nerd. I'm like, I only want Americano, and I want to see you pull it. I don't know what it's.
Yeah, about. I want to determine the amount of water that goes in with the espresso.
I want less.
But I like diner coffee still.
There's something special.
It's like one or the other. Coffee.
You either want Dunner coffee or like the finest, so you can separate the taste of each.
Exactly.
Yeah, bean.
Is this what your podcast's like?
Pretty it's much. Yeah, no, it is. I mean,
I talk about coffee. Coffee he cast. Sits there.
Oh my God.
Hey, what?
It's happening.
What's happening?
Oh, you started.
Yeah, it is.
The podcast is happening right now.
We have started.
It's happening. We're here.
I can't believe this is happening. This is like so a dream. Happening. It took, what, 10 months to get this organized between the four of us?
I was wondering if you were going to actually itemize how many communications we had back and forth.
We have like, I mean, maybe three email chains.
Yeah, the first time, the second time.
No, there is like 900 times.
There's so many times that you guys don't even know.
Really?
We would write each other trying to figure out
from every corner of the world.
But it would be always be like
on teeter-totter schedules of who was home and who was out.
So, I arrived from tour yesterday. I haven't even been home for 24 hours, but when you threw this date at me, I was like, "Look, I am able to do it, so let's just do it." My luggage is right there. I haven't unpacked yet.
Well, look at that it beat is. Up solid that solid is. State.
Yeah. So that is proof like that it. I just came. I haven't even taken the tags off it yet.
Oh my God, you have a Star Alliance Gold Elite Priorities.
I should hope
there.
So.
No, I'm hey, as from one hey, to another.
Is that okay?
We're keeping
you,
that.
You put your time up in the air up there.
I am rested.
Was it an upgrade?
It was an upgrade.
Okay, well, you've got all those credits. You have to use.
You
got
well, when it was 4 days, you can only upgrade 4 days before the flight.
Yes.
You can't upgrade any sooner. So 4 days, we were in Porto, and I didn't have enough money on my phone to make the call.
That's a sad.
All kinds of complications.
That sounds
I couldn't
like
do it online.
The joke is like to not have the few bucks credit on your phone to get the $1,000 worth upgrade for
exactly.
free.
So
there's some irony.
It was crazy.
Just like rippling through that situation.
Yeah. Well, isn't that your manager? Wouldn't your manager be calling to try and get you upgraded?
Don't rub it in.
I've got to do it by myself.
I mean, you could send an email and say, "Hey, Bernie, do you mind checking in on this?" Well, I don't know.
So who do you recommend?
Bernie Finkelstein, of course.
I was thinking that you were thinking.
You're really shit disturbing over here.
Hey, no, it's just a name. It's just a guy who manages Bruce Coburn, that's all.
That'd be cool.
Just a name.
If you went on tour with Bruce Coburn.
Disastrous. For both parties.
That's
you could cover If I Had a Rocket Launcher. Danko
that's
James.
Not his only song.
No, that's
the only
his
one
only
I know.
It's not his only song.
Heal the World. Did he write Heal the
Wondering
World?
Where the Lines Are? You never
oh,
heard that
yeah,
song?
Oh, yeah, I've heard that.
That song's beautiful.
Did you see that Bruce Coburn documentary?
No.
It was a pretty good one. Yeah. And then you realize afterwards going, that wasn't his only song.
No. No. You know the song.
They never are. The
you know
never
the song, Tokyo? Whoa, Tokyo. Something like that in your eyes.
We were just talking
me
about
and
that.
All the other guys.
Waiting for you guys. We were talking about, me and Nick were talking about cred.
Cred.
And how you're supposed, if
because
you have
we're
cred.
Because we're arriving, so you're thinking we better get up on cred because these two super credible people are arriving.
Actually, it was really, really sad. It was more like, have you heard the Uniform Choice song,
goes,
Screaming
yeah,
for Change? And he's like, what?
I know
that band. I don't know that song.
Uniform
I haven't
Choice.
Heard that Uniform yeah. Choice song. And then he goes to me, I thought you had cred, man. And I'm like, what does that mean? Am I supposed to know every goddamn song? Like,
but then
Uniform
you just
Choice.
Took me to task for not knowing every Bruce Coburn song. So you know.
And then I didn't know the song that Brendan was talking
about.
Ah,
it's a rabbit hole.
But what a great guitar player Bruce Coburn is.
Yeah.
Underrated, I should say.
A little side note here. Andrew Whiteman of Broken Social Scene, his dream, well, not his dream, but anyway, his idea to put a group, it's me, Bruce Coburn, and Julian Brown. That's in his weirdo
all on
guitar.
Guitars?
Yeah, all on, yeah. It'll
that
be sounds, a big.
That's not bad.
Be a big wank fest.
Could I be in the background playing the only the power chords?
Yeah.
To all those.
You'd be like, guys, someone's got to fill in the power. Someone's no one's playing. Just give me a good old G bar chord.
If there's someone who can play a power chord, it's me right here.
To root all that noodling.
Exactly.
Yeah. Rooting, and we could call it rooting noodling.
That's
a terrible idea.
Did you archive all your outgoing phone messages over the years?
No, not all. No, some of them.
You should put an album out.
Like that's exactly that. What I've said to him.
What's going on with this?
I'm A&R-ing Canning's next move, and it's that he needs to. We'll tell everyone out in cyberspace that over the years, so 15 years.
I've been waiting for you to step in as A&R, but. You've had this career going on.
It's troublesome.
It's been in the way of your A&R duties to my career.
Well, you know, give me a couple of white wine spritzers and I'm full of ideas for what you should do next.
Yeah.
But basically, as Danko said, yeah, the...
Bernie, couple white wine spritzers.
Yeah. Canning's outgoing phone messages. So when you call Canning, you get a 3-minute long...
Not usually that long. Sometimes. Never 3 minutes.
Don't forget, we used to live together.
Yeah. So when people called you too.
And we have musical careers in two different spheres.
Yes.
So some of the people in my sphere would call the house and would be met with this acoustic number.
Hands are.
Do you remember back when phones would have, when you'd call someone, it would. There would be one message saying, press 1 to leave a message for this person, 2 to leave a message. Like back in the olden days of phones.
Yeah, mailboxes that were...
Do they have that now?
Yeah. So would you have your own message on your own, press 2 to leave a message for so-and-so?
Yeah.
You'd have your own like power cord outgoing.
That's true.
Press 1 for Brendan, press 2 for Danko.
I do the home one. Yeah.
Press 1 for...
Anyway, those outgoing messages were... some of the most pure music I've ever heard. So
well,
beautiful.
Sometimes they're just gifts from my friends.
Oh, that's the name of the album there, then.
Gifts for my... There we go. From Saint Nick.
It's just beautiful.
Not this Nick.
But it would be great if it's like a lo-fi kind of outgoing message, phony kind of lo-fi thing. Mm-hmm, and it would just be maybe like...
What's the hesitation?
Like 75 tracks.
Nothing. This does sound like an amazing idea.
You know, 30 seconds long.
That's a good idea. Okay, we'll
Mike Patton put out an album called Adult Themes for Voice.
Oh, is that the thing he did on 4-track in all his hotel rooms?
In all his hotel rooms.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, it's wild. You could tell he's doing it in the washroom of a Holiday. And for each track, it was just the room. I think it was the hotel and the room number or whatever.
Like the city?
For each
and
track.
The...
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, those were the
so
tracks.
Cool.
There you go.
Mike Patton scored some movie I saw recently. Oh, he scored that... The City Beyond the Pines?
Oh, yeah.
The Place Beyond the Pines.
Gosling.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike Patton scored.
Oh, is it Gosling?
It's but
Gosling.
It also
I'm
used...
Out. Not no, man. It not might be into... good.
I'm not interested.
He's great.
Oh. But it also used a lot of source cues by... who's that guy? Anyway, it'll come to me. Don't worry.
I just heard a nice movie soundtrack as well for the movie The Manor. An excellent documentary.
The Manor.
Sounds, Jim Guthrie
sounds
did it.
British.
He's good.
Oh, is this about Jimmy G? The strip club in Peterborough.
Guelph.
Yeah.
How is the okay update? Last time you were here, you were working on a soundtrack yourself, Canning.
Yes.
With Lindsay Lohan and
James Dean.
Paul Schrader was he? Well,
yeah, he was directing.
Spelt with a silent H and Y. James Dean with a silent
James,
Y.
James Dean with E E N.
E E.
Oh,
he's
okay.
been in over 3,000 adult films.
Yes.
He gets more famous every day, too. I feel like he's
he's
like a weird crossing the threshold.
Did it work out?
Adult
did it come out? What's the update?
It's coming out in August.
And have you hung out with those stars?
No, only Paul Schrader.
And Braxton Pope.
Oh, and Braxton Pope, the producer. Still waiting to get paid.
Is this the Canyons?
No big deal.
Is this the Canyons?
You want that out on the podcast?
Sure. Yeah, you can put it out.
You put out his home address. I had to take that out, man.
Oh, take.
Yeah, you go. Hey, I'm like, and I said, are you sure you
I think
want
the
me to leave that on? There?
I think the day I'd have to become very famous to get stalked. I think stalking was more like. Do people
I know,
still
but
stalk?
This thing is
I
out forever, you know, kind of, until iTunes like collapses.
Yeah. So you I remember get your in... old your house when you guys lived together had a code on the front door instead of a key.
Yeah.
And I think there was endless amount of people who knew that code. I think I
Do
can still picture it. Was it a 1 and a 4 at the same time and then something in the middle?
Yeah, that's right.
Really?
It's different now. Yeah, you're right.
You know, I'm glad you're telling me this now and not telling me this when I just moved in. Because it would have scared the hell out of me.
You would have been like, we got to change the front door code.
Why is
that?
We have to change it every week.
Yeah. Why is that, Danko? Well, you know, I don't feel safe in here. I really
Leslie
don't.
Feist keeps coming around.
Yeah.
I don't feel safe.
I
she's
walked
in the
downstairs.
Kitchen. She's making eggs.
You know what? I was retelling the story of when our house got broken into by our neighbor and stole a couple of guitars.
Yeah.
Remember? And then, like, at 2 o'clock in the morning, we called the cops. And then we're sort of walking up the street with the cops, and Paul was peering out his little Venetian blinds there. Like, hey guys, what's going on? Like, well, someone stole our guitars. It's probably you.
Why did didn't you say that? Think it was him?
Because.
And why are you putting his last name out on a podcast right now?
Because
was he charged?
No, because he'll never be hearing this.
And, until his cousin hears this.
No, he left a review. He left a review already on the Danko Jones
iTunes page. Was he charged? Well, a couple years later, he was taken down in our backyard.
Really? I was going to ask what happened to that guy.
Well, he eventually, the house sold, but on their last day on the street, whatever, no one needs to know the number.
Oh my, it's just the world's shortest street.
It's only on 20 houses.
He keyed all the cars on the street.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Okay.
I want to know more about this guy.
Oh, he's classic.
Sounds like an original.
He got taken down in the backyard because he was...
By who?
By the cops.
Like snipers?
No, by the cops. Like he was hopping. He was hopping fences on our side of the street, and he was knocking on the neighbor's door, like asking for a pair of shoes, like pointing to his feet. And Ryan, who my next door neighbor, was sort of shrugging his shoulders. And then, like, a cruiser came, like, roaring, reversing down the street. And there was, like, a few cop cars coming. And finally, Sarah, who I was living with at the time, she came out to the... What's that? At the time, yeah.
Oh.
Hey, you know, we got to catch up. But anyway, she came outside and said, "He's back there! He's back..." That's her voice now. And anyway, yeah, the cops all came running through the gate, through the backyard, and then took him down. And, you know, anyway, there you go.
That's neighbors.
Our neighbor. That was one of the neighbors.
Did you ever jam with him?
No.
No, but the thing is, the guitar he stole was a Strat. And it forced me to get a Tele, which I ended up playing for years and years.
You never got your guitar back?
No. Yeah. But I bought a Tele, or I got a Tele after that because of that. I was looking to get out of the whole Strat thing.
Yeah.
I had my first guitar that I learned to play guitar on stolen. And yeah, it led me down a rabbit hole of... Because that was the best guitar in the world. It was a J.K. Lado.
Oh, Lady Lado.
Lady Lado. I called her Smoker's Tooth because she was creamy colored and crackled and sort of yellowing at the edges.
Was that the picture that I...
Yes.
Oh.
That guitar got stolen in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I was... opening for my waitress at a Hobbit-themed pizza joint in a basement of a strip mall in the suburbs of Kalamazoo. Yeah,
those were the great Hobbit-themed.
Yeah, it was called Smog the Dragon, and you know, hobbits don't like mushrooms, so there was like some. The mushroom pizza was called like something else.
Did they ever have a?
There was an arcade.
What roommate? You never.
That sounds like the
Michigan.
Best place of all time.
No, open for the waitress. The girl who served us, and then when we got our free pizza.
Who were you with?
Me and Dean Stone. Drums and me. That was like, that
you
was.
You guys just went
what
to play.
What year was this?
For like a year, we were a band, just the two of us. Feist was me and Dean Stone playing in strip malls. And
what year is this?
Like 2000, maybe?
Do you remember, I played one of your Rivoli nights.
What do you mean my Rivoli nights?
You had a night at the Rivoli, like back in 90...
No, I didn't have a night. It was Hayden had those nights.
Yeah, but you were
organizing one?
Yeah, hosting a night at the Rivoli, and it was like a singer-songwriter thing, and I had broken up with my girlfriend in 96, 97.
Lisa.
No, it wasn't Lisa.
Lisa. It was Lisa.
Was it Lisa? No, it wasn't. It was someone else. And then I played all these songs, and I remember you go you said to me afterwards, all these like depressing heartbreak songs. And then you told me, whoever she is, she has to hear those.
Oh, shit.
That's what you said to me. You don't remember that?
Canning pulled. No. I just have a extremely bad memory for details. Yeah. But I'm really glad when people jog my memory.
No, this is before we moved in together.
Yeah. Because you used to do some night at the Weave on Dundas.
But
the
you Weave. Did Rivoli nights, right?
Yeah, maybe the Rivoli was before because you were working at the Rivoli.
I was pretty activated back then. I was organizing.
Yeah,
you were. Yeah, that's how I think that's the first time I met you.
I remember.
And then when I moved in with Brendan, I was like, oh, that's a girl from the Rivoli.
That Booker girl.
Yeah, and then she's in By Divine Right. It's that Rivoli girl. So for a year, well, even to this day,
I did work the back bar at the Rivoli, For years I worked back there, and then Greg Buttrell, who booked the back room of the Rivoli, kind of let me help him book. I remember once, like, him saying, get these blonde redhead, the paperwork for blonde redhead together, get them across the border. And I was sort of learning how to like sponsor, get work permits sorted. I mean, I was really getting into booking. Yeah. And then he opened a bar called Lava, and I worked in the office there for him, kind of like part time.
Really? You worked at Lava?
I partied hard at Lava on Wednesdays.
Oh, Wednesday. You did Mod Club.
Partied?
I would on Wednesdays?
Yeah.
I remember Apostle of Hustle, but before Andrew Whiteman was called Apostle of Hustle, he was called K-Vita. And he had this
played with K-Vita at the Rivoli.
Yes.
Did you book that gig?
Probably. Well, I was there, if nothing else.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, so then Apostle started to do these weekly nights, and also Sun, which was God. Jason Beck, who is Gonzalez, my best friend and compadre for years and years now. Back then, Sun Live at Lava was an album that he made, being this organ trio where he played an ace tone organ, and Maki played drums, and Taylor Savvy / Dave Seghetti played like lap steel or something. And that was one of my favorite bands of all time. And they just did these weird weekly residency at Lava. So, there was so much, all these formative gigs for me were, now I'm realizing, like 13 years ago, all the stuff that I used to obsessively go watch. I would obsessively go to Apostle of Hustle shows, K-Vita shows, and the Sun shows, which became, they all splice off. Maki became Maki. Taylor Savvy became Taylor. Everyone
didn't some of the guys in K-Vita become like some electronica?
Oh, yeah. Dan Kurtz. Oh, The New Deal.
Yeah. Didn't they get
he was the bass player for The New Deal. And then him and his wife formed Dragonette.
Oh, yeah.
But it's Greg's so got bizarre. A new place yeah. in Kensington where we had our book release launch. What was yeah. it called?
Oh, Supermarket.
Supermarket.
Yeah. Oh, that yeah, makes yeah. total sense. Yeah. Now that I understand it's the same owner as of Lava, I completely understand Supermarket now because it has the same feel.
Yeah, it's been around for about 8 years.
And he opened Tempo as well on College
it's Street. A new place.
I have no idea, man.
It's probably been longer than 8 years. Yeah, so... Greg, I really like this new place here. Oh, thanks.
We opened in 2000. Our 10th anniversary is coming up.
I was like, oh, congrats on this place.
Yeah, but Greg's been around long enough now to know that basically touring musicians, like 8 years is like, so like your new place because you've been gone for 11 months a year for the last 8 years. And
you know.
Can't keep track of everything, except then you go past your old job and it's a condo.
Everything's a condo.
So weird. It's this like historic walk back time because Canning and I were just talking in the car about how this arts and crafts anniversary thing, and I was sort of on the 10 year because it's this 10th year anniversary of arts and crafts, and I was like, yeah, 10 years, man, we've been doing this for 10. And Canning was like, we're going on 20. I met Canning at my first gig I ever played in my life because my band Placebo, my little punk band, won a high school battle of the bands in Calgary, and then the prize for that was to play the citywide battle of the bands, which we won. And the prize for that was to play at this 1993 Infest, headlined by the Bad Brains and Ramones and
the Cadillac
Violent
Tramps.
Femmes.
And did you play that?
Yeah. And we got to play on the main stage at like 4 p.m. and Head was on at 5 p.m.
I think we were
you
on
guys
before
played with
you.
The Ramones?
Well, kind of.
Did the Ramones actually show up for that gig?
Yeah, I watched the Ramones.
Who of the Smalls played?
The Smalls. Classic.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, shoot.
I mean, but that I was 16.
Yeah.
And Canning was a little older than that.
I was a little
older. I remember there, I hadn't been on tour yet.
I think the Doughboys played that one. Yeah, the Doughboys definitely played
Superconductor.
Superconductor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just made contact with AC Newman recently through Twitter.
Oh, cool. Yeah, me too. Actually.
Praising Superconductor.
What, he was in Superconductor?
Yeah, he was
I did not know
lead
that.
Singer and
either.
Guitar player
Are
lead
you
singer.
Kidding
That's crazy.
Superconductor came after New Pornographers.
No.
Before.
No, way before. They were noisy, right?
Yeah, no. Sorry, before Zampano.
Before Zampano. I did a piece on Huffington Post.
Zampano were good.
10 greatest noise bands from Canada, and Superconductor was one of them. And then I just tweeted him and I said, hey, look, I did this here. And then he started following me and we exchanged a few tweets and that was it.
Our last tweets were, so I think cool. I tweeted about, I just said, Depeche Mode are better than New Order. I might have said it more eloquently. And then he tweeted back something.
I hope so.
And then I said, yeah, but this, this, and this. And then he said, yeah, you're right. True story. That's the end of that one. I will say, I saw A.C. Newman play, I think we were playing Pitchfork, and he started out the set, and it was clear that the guitar was a half step out when he was playing it.
Ouch.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, it's like, wow, are they really going to start this song? Because I can clearly hear that guitar is tuned completely. It was probably sunny. You know, you're looking down at your tuner. You can't see the little sharp cymbal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
And sure enough, they go into it. And then, you know, 30 seconds in, I can't remember. I was up at the front, but he said, your whole guitar, you're out. Like, half a step. You're too sharp or you're too, I don't know, whatever it was. It was a bizarre sound.
What happened? I'm always curious as to how performers handle situations.
He had to stop because it was completely.
It was the first song of the set.
First song of the set.
Man. No, you don't stop.
No, yeah, you wouldn't
stop.
No, because that happened.
You used a Discord to your advantage somehow, right?
You gotta just turn it into a bit.
You gotta fuse it.
Like
Canning's like. Mm-hmm.
We played in Madrid just last week, and the first song, you know, like the huge intro music, the whole crowd's cheering. Yeah. I hit into the first chord, my tuner's on, and there's nothing coming out. Now, you know, you either go into panic mode and let everyone see this,
or
you just keep playing.
Yeah.
And I just kept playing for like, I think it lasted for about 30 seconds.
So in mute. So yeah. They think the problem is at front of house or something, right?
The problem's, they're the ones with the problem. They're the ones who can't hear it. I can hear it fine. There's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Oh, right. It's all like, smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, it's all.
Is that what you said after the song was over?
No, you just don't address it. You're like, yeah, this is amazing.
That sounded weird to you.
So that's what he should have done. That's why I'm always curious as to what people do in those situations.
I had something like that happen in New Zealand where I was systematically being electrocuted by the microphone.
That's
and
no
in fact,
fun.
My front.
Oh, it wasn't
tooth.
Grounded?
Wait, in what city?
In Auckland.
Oh, in Auckland.
It wasn't grounded.
And what happened was that, like, my tooth, the nerve in my tooth, basically shorted out all the power on the stage. Because
that's amazing.
It's still, like, I wish my rock and roll injury was a little bit more romantic than that, but I, like, my face was zapped, my nerves in my face, it was so bad. But it shorted out all the power on the stage. So basically what ended up going was just my world, all my pedals and the mic, the power, everything, but there was still kind of rhythm section vibe happening. It was a huge festival, and in those moments, you really like your soul being calloused over. Like you've got hardened, you can make it through. You're not going to just sort of make it their problem. The audience don't understand what's gone on. No, it's a technical problem.
If I
make it their problem, then it becomes doubly my problem.
Right.
I've got the pain to deal with, and the fact that I might have to spend the next three songs somehow making it through without any audibility coming out of me.
Yeah.
But yeah, some new instincts kick in those moments. It's not fun, but in a way it's sort of like I used to complain on stage and I just can't do it anymore.
No one wants to hear a bank.
It took me years. Well, you just like apologize basically. Oh. Say, everything's wrong up here, sorry, you know. But at this point it's like nothing's wrong. I meant for this to happen. And it always brings them on side because they can see the, you know, that you're desire to like keep the spirit up is greater than your desire to whine about how conditions are shitty at an outdoor festival called Laneway.
Right. Do you think that
the old Laneway festival. Did we play that one? Did Broken play that one?
Yes, we did it, and then I actually Glutton for Punishment went back again.
Oh, did you? A third was that
it?
Because
we
played
just,
that one
they're
twice.
They're lovely people, but the technical stuff was killing me. I got electrocuted like three different times on those. No rain, no reason, just poorly wired stages where I was just sort of almost like a dog getting kicked. Like I didn't want to go anywhere near the mic, but you kind of have to sing a show.
That's a sad.
Well, I mean, when that happens to me,
it's a sad, I just thinking sad of day.
We do a 57 on the mic. 57 is supposed to protect.
Really?
Yeah. So we change.
You always put one of those shame socks on top of them.
I
hate those foamy.
No, I go there. I always have it.
You have the foamy shame sock?
I travel with about 10 of them.
Yeah, because that way you can get up really close. You can get up really close.
The foams or the 57s?
The foams. Over every mic, including there's foam. I have foam for 57s and I have foam for 58s.
Is that just for electric reasons?
Germs.
For a lot of
must be germs.
That's a big thing. Because I remove if something. You know when monitor guys come up to you and they're like, "Is it good?" and then they start going up to your mic. The entire crew, when a monitor guy comes close to my mic, the entire crew goes, no, stop where you are. Stop where you are. Because that's just basically... So, I can attest
to that.
Well, you know what happened? We were in Lisbon that night that Arturo texted you.
Yes.
What happened that show at the show is I had the mic in my hand. Some guy grabbed the cable and yanked it down and took the mic and started talking into the mic, my mic, ooh, to my sock. And I just
during like, the show.
During the show.
Oh, okay.
In between the songs.
Right.
And I grabbed it and I took the sock off and I go, now because of what you did, we're going to wait till we find a new sock.
Did you say the word sock?
No, a new foam or whatever I said.
Yeah. You said foam.
Yeah, we call it a shame sock.
I just stood there until our guy got me a new one.
But don't you want to develop a resistance to germs by exposure?
Kevin and I would do that too. When I'd go to the lead mic to sing, be shame sock on.
Really?
Finish, shame sock off.
Wow. In Placebo, when I was, you know, 17, 18, first starting to tour, I thought it was so cool that I had my own 58 because it was just that putrid, brutal, beaten up mics at like the Pyramid in Winnipeg, you know?
You wore two socks for though, two foams.
Yeah, but to unzip mine, little toothbrush with some, you know, Listerine on there and have my own mic, I always felt like, I mean, that was before I played a guitar.
I'm using my own mics. I'm not using the club's mic.
No, of course.
I'm using my own mic and then I'm putting a foam over the mic.
Yeah. Just double protection.
Yeah, but also it also works with like
if it is you, double protection.
If you're going into it a little more readily than you would, like if you're getting so into the song and you bash your teeth, which has happened to me,
yes,
that kind of also kind of acts as a cushion.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So you can just give yourself over to the rock.
Yeah. That's a little lesson for you kids at home.
Get some foam.
Get some shame socks.
If you
want
to be as heavy as Danko Jones.
Yeah. Oh, don't do that because I buy them all at Long & McQuaid. Oh.
Okay, so but Toronto people, can you order them by email?
I wanted to say something about bands complaining on stage because I just thought about this band. First of all, their band name is Tennis.
Is that a good or a bad thing?
No, that's a pretty good name. What?
You can have a name that's a thing.
Anyway.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you, champ.
The singer was complaining about how she, you know, she was sick and couldn't hit certain notes.
You're fucking kidding me.
Like likened herself to Janis Joplin. I'm like, I don't know if Janis Joplin was alive, whether she'd like to be compared to you.
I'm not even a huge
Janis Joplin fan, but like, I'm kind of like channeling my Janis Joplin.
That
or
makes
something.
Me cringe on in a memory way because that used to be me. I remember. The Trial by Fire came years later when I broke a string on stage and sang this song, this American folk song when I was a young girl, a cappella while I restrang the guitar. At the Rancho Relaxo.
And that you sang that song at Rancho Relaxo?
Yeah, but because it used
was
to be
YouTube
just,
there exist back then?
I don't think the internet existed.
Isn't that song on Let It Die?
Yeah, well, that was years later that I made Let It Die.
I was a young girl.
But back then, it was sort of like this a cappella thing I could pull out of my hat to like, what'd you say?
No, we'll outro with that.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. Boom, 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 boom. Good version.
But yeah, because before that, I would have been like, oh, sorry, I have to go and change a string. Oh, everyone just like have a drink, you know?
Yeah.
And then that day.
With that voice, too.
I'm so sorry. I'm the nutty professor.
It might have been Dan Kurtz, actually. Speaking of like K Vita, because then Dan was my bass player for years and recorded my first Feist record anyway, Monarch.
Monarch.
He was my bass player and he'd just like, you got to stop complaining on stage. You can't. And he's like, you can't shoot me dirty looks when you think I'm hitting wrong shit. I'm not. Yeah. Like, he kind of schooled me. Like, you don't let the audience see that there's any discord on stage, first of all.
Totally.
Second of all, you don't make it their problem by complaining. I mean, sort of, he'd been in bands longer than me at that point. I was still green.
You also want to give the audience sometimes an indication that what they're watching doesn't happen on all the other nights. So what they're watching is a unique thing that's happening. So if something does fuck up, you know, you make some sort of reference to how this never happens.
Colette doing that one of his songwriter nights, and So it was probably like Andrew Cash or someone forgot the lyrics and then like kind of steps in on the microphone and says, this only happens, you know, makes it kind of show of it and people applaud. I'm like, what? Great. He forgot the yeah. lyrics.
He got a little bit of applause.
Sports team.
Got
a little bit of applause.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's showbiz, folks.
Yeah, or else, you know, I guess I'm revealing too much, but, you know, you also walk out on what I was doing on this last tour was, which I never really was observant of, but I think the audience, especially how we come out being a rock band, it's all like fucking game face and, you know,
mm-hmm.
I went the opposite direction for this last tour. I just walk on and I'd smile.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people would just be like, wow, he's really into being here.
That
can you think of a scandy
how
band?
Weird. Up on my Danko podcast.
Oh, there's been some good stuff.
There's some good stuff coming down. Oh, and I must mention, this is the 50th episode.
What?
Hey. Oh.
We made it to 50. Yeah.
Right, let's do an actual.
So we had a yeah.
ceramic
although
cheers.
I don't have anything left.
I don't have anything
left. My monitor guy, Sully, he's a real metal guy, and I always joke, like, sorry you work for me, because it's super, like, snoozy lullaby stuff for you know, someone who's into metal. But then when I ended up doing that split 7-inch with Mastodon,
oh yeah,
it was like he was like the reporter from the front lines of how the metal world was sort of like into my cover.
I was very surprised about that.
Oh,
how did
I
that,
was just
how
going
did that
through the
45. How did that even happen?
Well, I
that's
I,
a good tune.
Yeah, Black Tongue.
Their split with Mastodon.
Yeah, I covered their song Black Tongue and they covered my song Commotion.
Oh, that's amazing.
And that happened because we both played Jules Holland and I had not heard of Mastodon because I live in a bubble of, you know, my whatever
that's
book I'm
totally
reading
fine.
On tour and whatever mixtape a friend gives me or whatever. Same
and you
as,
hadn't talked to John Crossingham about Mastodon.
No, I actually wrote him about that afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's the man to ask, you know. But
about certain things, sure.
But we end, I don't know, me and I can't remember the guy's name.
Troy?
No, the...
Brent?
Brent B. Hines. We ended up talking in the dressing rooms, and I, you know, just genuinely great kind of Southern gentleman style, like really sweet guys. And, yeah. They were being very
behind the scenes.
Nice. And I just said something like I was really into his tone and like I just sort of said something like I want to learn those riffs, man. I want to like figure that shit out because, you know, Jules Holland has this really dumb thing that has to happen at the beginning of every episode where he stands in the middle and there's five bands in a circle around, like that's how this show mm-hmm. in England, I don't know if you guys all
yeah.
know what I'm talking about.
I'm aware of the show.
It's like
yeah.
a TV
I'm aware
show.
That we were always on hold for Jules Holland and never actually got to play on it.
Bitterness.
Next.
Whoa.
Next.
Bitter.
Well, the first time I ever played it, it was Radiohead, Cat Power, Mary J. Blige, and me. It was like,
oh,
I was like, how
Jesus.
The hell did I get, you know, and you all play facing a center. You all your bands are set up in your own world facing a center. And then everyone, you like Radiohead plays a song, and then Jules Holland goes, and now from America, Cat Power. And
that's
then she plays a song. It's pretty brutal. Like you're
singing
just,
in front of Mary J. Blige?
Yes. And yikes. Singing in front of Tom York and like having to keep your shit together and like how'd I get invited to this
Tom
party?
York, whatever. You can
oh, whatever. You can hold your own with any of those.
You can hold your own.
Wait a minute
anyway,
here.
The
let's
next time I did it, pause. The next
pause.
Time I did it was Mastodon, some band from France I'd never heard of, and
Phoenix.
And Bon Iver. Jeez. No, no.
I'm just naming French bands.
Charles Trenet.
Ah, Bon Iver.
Isn't it Bon Iver?
Bon Iver.
I thought it was because I'm into rock.
I'm surprised he hasn't made. He's moving in on the Canadian Shantouzes.
Oh, really?
Liz Powell. He produced her record. And
he did?
They dated for like a year.
That's cool.
And then he moved into Kathleen Edwards territory.
Get
And out of here.
Record, right?
And produce her record,
too. I didn't
know
about the Liz Powell.
Yeah, so watch your back.
Liz Powell's amazing. Look, he's a friend of mine. There's no
for now.
Untoward.
So it was, Bon Iver, Bon Iver and Mastodon, and you?
Yeah, and me and some French sort of funk band with, like, matching dance moves. It's just so weird.
It was but Daft anyway, Punk.
Daft Punk. That's it. There was these two astronauts standing there with some laser guns.
Justice.
Anyway, he stands in the middle and he makes everyone play a jam together. So he asks a band to start a jam. So just start a groove. He calls it, get a groove going. And then you have to, and then so one band starts a groove and then he rolls over to the next band and the camera moves and watches everyone pick up on the key and everyone has to have this awkward jam together. It's like the worst.
So there was a Mary J. Blige fight.
Mastodon.
Radiohead
jam.
Mastodon were asked to start the jam.
Oh, okay. Because they're kind of like, you know, punk rockers in a way. They'll
but the time signature was so complicated that I was observing this like
awesome. That's them the giving drummer, the finger to everyone.
Yeah, but they didn't get they're you know, they didn't sort of get on the same level with each other because the drummer I could see like craning his neck to like try to see the guy's fingers because there was no way to hear any time signature in that riff. And the drummer kind of started and he couldn't find anything. And then we were the next band to, it was supposed to roll over to us. And they looked so confused and we were so confused. And Jules Holland kind of like called it and said like, give it another go, boys. And then they basically just did like 12 bar blues or something.
Right.
Like. But anyway, so we were backstage kind of bonding on like, I was like, man, you guys are good sports. Like if he'd asked us to start, there's no fucking way. Like, I don't know how. We just like play some 12 bar blues, so you know, and then he said like, "You got some nice riffs, girl," and I was like, "I bet you can't play my riffs, boy." You know, that kind of vibe. It was totally a casual conversation that then I heard about Record Store Day and thought, "Oh, that would be cool," but it wasn't something I'm not gonna mobilize that. Like a conversation backstage doesn't get mobilized into something like that. But then I was doing a bank of phoners one day and. And 9 in a row from all over the world. Like I was doing like some Brazilian ones and then some like Danish ones and then some like sort of setup ones. And all of them were like, so what's this Mastodon split 7-inch? And I was totally like, I didn't have enough room in between phoners for about 2 hours to hang up and call someone in my world and say, what are they talking about? But Mastodon had been on some interview with like some video interview. They were in the studio of MTV or something and had said, we're doing a split 7-inch with Feist for Record Store Day. And I basically was informed about it from like all those crazy phoners from all over who had heard about this. And I thought, great, they're mobilizing it by just announcing. I have not been in touch. I have not spoken a word to any
of
them.
But was something talked about? For them to even go ahead and say that?
Probably, like I had maybe said on my end, that would be great. Like I want to bite into one of their songs and see, I wanted to hear them try to cover the bad in each other, which they ended up choosing Commotion, which was awesome. I was really into it. I actually shot a video to their version of Commotion because I just thought it was like such a bizarre. Did you ever see that?
No.
Is that on YouTube?
No.
Yeah, sure, I'm sure.
I got to catch up with along with the Danko Jones podcast.
Yeah,
series.
Right. I got to watch this hour and a half long documentary on Danko. But anyway, it was. I have not been in touch with any of them since, but it was a casual conversation. Then I got to hear their version. They heard mine. I've never even written to say. I guess I should.
Really?
Should write to say that was awesome.
Well, this is a letter to
Yeah, because, I mean, we had Braun, the drummer for Mastodon, on a past podcast.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, yeah. But we never, we never got to that, talking about
I'm sure to them it was a day of recording, just like me. But for me, it was just sort of like so satisfying to get to. I listened to everything they've ever recorded, and basically because you can interpret however you want, but I listened for lyrics that I would be able to believably get behind.
Right.
And they have a lot of like lore lyrics, like referencing arcane sort of like Viking sects and different mountain ranges.
As you do when
fantasy.
You're a metal band.
Yeah.
You know, like Volitius, brought his trident, like, you know, just, I don't even know. Well, what,
some of them, like Leviathan, are based on Moby Dick. That album is completely about Moby Dick.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, the Mastodon record.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the one before the last one was, I think, one of the band members' sisters passed away, and that had a lot to do with it. So there are basically real hard themes, but the last one, The Hunter,
yeah,
I don't think there was any theme. They just put a bunch of songs together.
You might have been referencing Moby Dick without even knowing it, like, well, we all are in our lyrics.
But when I heard of this split 7-inch between you and Mastodon, I thought it made complete sense.
Oh, right on.
I thought that it would be, knowing those guys, they're so open-minded when it comes to music, and I, knowing you, I kind of figured that, yeah, that's, whether people know it or not, from my standpoint, it's a very seamless kind of meshing and mixing. I didn't kind of raise a red flag at all. I was just like, well, that's
2013.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it just seemed like a cool
Anything
thing.
Can happen.
Well, I mean, if there was, you know, kind of like in that kind of singer-songwriter world to take on Mastodon and mm-hmm. make sense out of it, and if there was any metal band in the metal world to cross the bridge, it would be these two acts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I called Crossingham, John Crossingham of Broken Social Scene history, mm-hmm. because he's such a knowledgeable, he's got the tweezers out of every single nuance of every, and I basically was like, you got to help me out, because I don't want to accidentally choose the Satisfaction or the, you know, the, I didn't want to choose the hit to cover accidentally, because I don't know their whole story. I wanted to choose something that was, you know, like underneath, like I had done some digging, and mm-hmm. so Crossingham kind of sent. I was like, what do you think about Black Tongue? He narrowed it down to like 5 or 6 songs that he thought would be, like, you know. And at the end of the day, they have so many records out and so much stuff. I ended up on searching their lyrics online and then just reading through the lyrics. And when I really clicked with something, I'd go and listen to the song and be like, okay, no, that has like 9 time signature changes. Like, I'm not gonna bite that one off. But
that's interesting. I love listening to the process of, like, deconstructing a band as complex as Mastodon.
So it's like the shows I grew up going to, like. You know, it's like, fucking love power chords, and it's like what I grew up listening to, and it's all the Calgary scene was like a lot of hardcore, like, you know, it's just like not a, like those guys noodle, but they also have this basis of this really, like, you know, why I loved Danko when I first saw Danko. Also, it's just like giant, meaty, like power, you know. It's not a lot of noodling.
No, and it's
simple.
No progression.
Simple, heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always what I can get behind too.
That's how I prefer.
And then lyrics too. I'm at the point when I write lyrics, they're like the dumbest things in the world. I the more like a caveman they sound, the more comfortable.
Are you equating my lyrics to caveman?
No, I'm saying that's what I like.
That's your thing.
But you sometimes get there. But that's because I was gonna ask you what kind of lyrics struck a chord with you, Leslie?
Of the Black Tongue. Okay.
Just in general, what does, but in that particular...
Oh, yeah, you know, I don't know.
I mean, what is it that makes people get behind certain lyrics?
I guess I like kind of metaphors, you know, any specifics that get into too much sort of like, you know, just combing through crazy details, I don't find as interesting as like elemental enormity, you know, so talking about like... just symbolic enormity.
Born to Run, maybe too detailed.
There's a lot of storyteller singers I love to listen to, I guess, when they stun skillfully, like Ron Sexsmith or, Springsteen or, you know, Ron Nick Sexsmith Lowe.
Nick Lowe, Ron Sexsmith.
Yeah. I heard a new Ron Sexsmith from Ron. I was walking home and ran into Kevin Hearn. Like, oh, Ron's in the house. So hung out with Kevin and his family and Ron. And Ron, he's hilarious. He told a good story about hanging out with Paul McCartney.
That's great.
Yeah. At the breakfast table.
We love Ron Sexsmith. And when I say we, I mean JC as well. He's a huge, huge Ron Sexsmith fan.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah. And I don't know where is he right now in terms of his career?
He's looking for a producer. But
I wish he would just make. I have a vision in my A&R mind.
You should.
I think he should just strip it all down and do it himself. He's been making records long enough. He knows what he's best at. I his records that he's made with producers who add beats and slick him up, I find so less appealing and less.
I sang some backup on the no, I wasn't even backup. I got relegated to gang vocals on one set, the Bob Rock the Bob Rock produced record. But it was cool being on the
other. You're on a Ron Sexsmith album.
I know.
Yeah, I know. I just got relegated.
You know, the group vocal is not super exciting.
I got to do lead vocals on a Ron Sexsmith album.
Well, you know, at least like a harmony part, but. But either way, it was fun. It was fun seeing Bob Rock on the other side of the glass.
Bob Rock did a Ross.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
See, that's the thing. It seems like someone's thinking of an equation rather than actually like just trusting himself. He came up and used my house. Like people have used my house to record in, and he came up and worked just demoing for a couple of days. Piano, acoustic. I think that's it. Piano and acoustic and voice. Like he just like did a couple passes.
And what to you is like. Perfect.
It's perfect. Yeah. It was perfect. It was
but
like
not
the
to Ron, an A&R guy.
It was the Ron Sexsmith album that I wanted to hear, and I think like probably the bulk of the people who've been following him this many years, that's what they want to hear too. You know, yeah. But we all—it's like everyone thinks they own the people they love. You know, it's like he's
save yourself a bit of money too. Go up and record acoustic guitar and piano for 3 days.
Bring a couple frozen pizzas.
Yeah, bam shabam.
Doctor Otker.
You got yourself an album.
Wow. Are we going to reminisce about the time that we took Canning to the emergency room?
Oh, I never even thought of that.
What happened?
Kidney stones.
Oh, painful.
Poor Canning. We're watching a movie when he lived on Beep Street with Danko.
This is true.
And I just started to scream and writhe in inexplicable pain, and I had no idea what the hell was going on.
That was
because you couldn't even communicate anymore. You blacked out almost, like you couldn't even make eye contact anymore.
Because I had two kidney stone episodes, and the first one, you and Peaches picked me up from the hospital.
Oh man, no, that so was you were, the second one.
So Leslie, you were there for both of the kidney stone episodes.
No, I remember picking
you
up
were there
the
for
hospital.
The first one, and then the second one, it was not as severe. The first time around, my roommate, this was
the first time was when I went to Danko's room, knocked on the door, and was like, because you have a van.
Yeah, but
like,
when you knocked on the door, I was sleeping, right?
Yeah, you were like
and what was
totally
it, 10:30 at night?
Oh.
It was even later. It was like midnight or something.
And we were probably watching On Golden Pond or something.
No, we were watching 9 and a Half Weeks.
I'm not
kidding.
That's what prompted the kidney stone passing.
Boner, kidney stone.
Mickey Rourke will do that.
Yeah, man. Mickey Rourke, Bassinger.
But I'm telling you, because I had two episodes, and the first one was before Danko moved in.
And that's when Peach and I picked you up from
the
hospital.
You and Peach picked me up, and then 4 months later...
Oh, man.
For some reason, I had a feeling that it wasn't the first time.
Yeah, I think you moved in around May.
But we went. I think you dropped us off...
In front of the... Yeah, you couldn't park, so I dropped you off.
I took him in.
University Avenue.
You were on the floor of the emergency room. The woman behind
Mount
Sinai,
I think I
dropped.
Yeah, with Mount Sinai, I think you're right.
Just had no sympathy.
No.
For all she knew, you were just high or something, because no sympathy. I was like, can you give him a Tylenol or anything? But didn't you later have a theory that the reason that was going on was because of the catering on the Tragically Hip tour?
Yes.
Much cake. Canning was just... enjoying the spread at these hockey arena shows that we were playing in 99.
Oh, but it was the Bonnie Wainwright did the hip
we
tour.
Supported,
I was 22 years old, and these guys, we were all kind of like turning 30, I think, that year.
Not quite.
Mark Close Goldstein, Jose Contreras, you all turned 30 that year or 2000.
Yeah, that year,
Brendan's trying to play
He's
it
like,
down.
No, not no. quite. Like,
no,
30,
I'm
going to
pin this down.
And a half.
I did. I turned 30 when we were on tour with Blurtonia. All right, come on.
All right, let's go get... Are we going for lunch?
Yay.
Is it too late for lunch or what?
Yeah.
I got time for like a quick bite. My friend is leaving for Europe, and I just have to see him around 3. So I think I'm fine.
It's 1:30.
Yeah,
4. It's 1:40.
Yeah, we could...
Let's go.
It's we can grab something.
Tie around the corner?
Sure. Whatever.
Yeah?
I'm
pretty quick.
Okay, so that's what we're going to do.
That was fun.
And that was fun, and we finally did it.
Yeah, that was super
and,
fun.
And we're ending it now.
Super fun. Right.
Do you want a little sign-off here or anything?
Yeah, why don't you sign off?
Okay. That was a great podcast. I'm really glad it happened. I'm really glad to be here. Feist, are you really glad to be here today?
She's...
Okay, that was a yeah from the other room. And everyone else?
Yeah.
All good, yeah? Okay, all great. Right. All right, boom. Thanks. Burned out my eyes.